Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
I welcome you to the Nerdist Podcast number 483. Okay, just a couple quick things up top, and then we'll get right into the show. But we're going to be doing At Midnight at the South Beach Comedy Festival April 4th. Tickets are at southbeachcomedyfestival.com. So, we're going to try it at midnight live, see how it goes. And if it works, which I believe it will, because we did it live for months leading up to the television version of the show, then we'll tour it, I'm assuming, which it's fun. It's fun to see it live. It works really well as a live show. Also, I'm going and doing some stand-up in New York May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, I believe, at Caroline's. I will be back there. It's been almost a year, so come on out. Working on the new set. I'll probably shoot the special in about 10 months or so, the next special. So come on out and join me for that. Tickets are at, or information for tickets are at nerdist.com/calendar. This episode of the podcast is Annie Clark, a.k.a. St. Vincent, who I've been a huge fan of for a very, very, very long time. She has an amazing voice. I love her music. It's not like anything else. She also did a great collaboration album with David Byrne. And she has a new album out February 25th. It is actually a self-titled album, St. Vincent. And then her U.S. tour begins February 26th at Terminal 5 in New York. Annie's really funny. If you may have heard her on Comedy Bang Bang. But she is a comedy fan and super cool and did a walk on At Midnight. So I am now... She has now cemented my fandom for her by being extra cool. So here's the Nerdist Podcast number 483 with Annie Clark, a.k.a. St. Vincent.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Get in the bus chair!
He's a fucking blazer.
That's so nice!
Seriously.
Thank you!
So we're all essentially here for a job interview.
Yeah.
And then by the end, you get to determine whether or not we get the job.
Oh, man.
I did a bunch of speed like PUD and Trainspotting.
Yeah.
I tried too hard.
Such a good movie.
Yeah.
Gotta watch that again.
Yeah. It's a good rewatch.
What do you do when you're on the road? Do you watch stuff
you
or do you
shows,
play games? Or besides the shows. The shows take up the least amount of time.
Right. Yeah. It's true. What do I do when I'm on the road? I mean, that's a really good time to get like super caught up on XYZ TV that you binge watching. For a while there, I was watching, and I still I revisit it all the time, The Louis Show, and that was our vocal warm up, like the Louis, you know. Wow. Up a half step. Louis, you know.
This is good. This is perfect for the scales. Mm-hmm. You go all the way up and down.
Absolutely.
Have you been on that show yet?
On Louis?
Yes.
No, I haven't been on Louis.
What are you talking about? You've done Bang Bang. You've done... did you do Portlandia?
Yeah, I did Portlandia twice.
Well, then don't act like it'd be so shocking.
It would be shocking.
It would maybe be shocking.
You know, because, you know, like that episode, it's a two or three episode thing where... Parker Posey's on.
Yes.
That is the most beautiful fucking television I have ever seen.
And then at the end of the season?
Yes.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. I mean, it's great. It's beautiful. But, like, it's a real sad. I like it that he gets that sad.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I couldn't be on the Louis show because Parker Posey gave that performance on the Louis show. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
But you wouldn't have to be her character. You could come on as a whole new person.
I know.
Totally
I'm not.
Be a girl that Louis is trying to date on that show.
No.
Yes.
Will it into existence?
Okay, I'm going to work on that. my mantra. My Louis mantra.
Yeah, that is a phenomenal show, and he sort of redefined what a... I mean, I don't know if I would call it a sitcom. Mm.
No, it's just a show.
But it is a situational comedy show, so technically...
It's a situational comedy show about depression.
This is how old this desk is. That's from Lucky Louie, his HBO show.
Oh, I saw that.
That one wasn't as good.
That was
good
not,
experiment.
Yeah.
Good experiment, though.
Yeah, you got to have a first record, right?
He really tried, though. He really tried to do something different, though. But it just there was something about it that just wasn't quite. Yeah. But to come back and do that one, I mean, go ahead.
I think he kind of addressed it in the revamped Louis. Remember when he's like he gets the show? What do you call it? When you rewind your brain and are reminiscing about something.
Oh, flashback.
Thank you. You won.
Thank you.
Hired.
I won. I had fucking guys.
and like, you know what I'm you know what I'm talking about?
He had a flashback episode.
He's a flashback episode of when it's the fictional, you know, Lucky Louie, and it's just like that old stupid sitcom trope of like nerdy whatever and like wife that's too hot for him, and then he says something totally shitty to her.
Oh, right,
you know
right,
what I'm
right,
talking
right,
about?
Right, right, right. Yes,
and he's like,
yes,
I don't,
yes,
you
yes.
know, and he's like, I wouldn't, why would I do that? And why would she stay here and still love? Anyway, I'm talking too much about Louis.
You're not talking too much about Louis at all, okay. But I love the fact that you seem like a huge comedy nerd. I mean, just from the stuff that I've seen you on and the people that I've seen you around, like you're kind of a comedy person.
Well, I love it. I mean, you know, it's like saying you like comedy is like saying like you like pizza. Like everybody I think likes comedy, but or like everybody likes music, but I find that I get along with comedians because I think there's some sort of like similar plight, especially stand-ups, because you're going out there and there's like abject failure awaiting you.
You think so?
Yeah.
Around every fucking corner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And same thing with music. I mean, it's like there's just, you know, you could be put in the jaws of a failure, really. I mean, it's high stakes, I guess, is what I mean.
I guess, but when I feel like, well, now it's different. I'm sure it's different for you because people come out to see you on purpose and people come out to see me on purpose. So there is a little bit of a safety net of like, man, most of the people here are going to have an idea. But I do remember the days when that was not the case and kind of feeling like, fuck, I wish I just had a song to fall back on because at least people could groove out to the music instead of these words, which they're really not buying into at the moment.
Or at least you wouldn't be able to hear them chat during your set. playing loud stuff.
We did the Vancouver Comedy Festival one year, and it was my best friend and I had this little musical comedy duo. So we did a show with Flight of the Conchords, and it was a music venue. So people didn't realize that it was also a comedy show because we were playing songs. So the whole time...
Yeah.
They were just trying to talk over us. Yeah. Like, there's jokes here. Yeah.
Bar band.
Oh,
bar band.
Yeah. Yeah, we got bar banded. We totally got bar banded.
Oh man.
I know.
But you know what like when you were coming up, you definitely I'm sure had some rough nights and so did I got booed off stage.
Are you serious? You?
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
Yes.
When was this?
You know, I was it was early. I don't think I had a record out. I was you know, I don't think I had a label even. I might be getting the timeline confused, but I had an agent. And so my agent, who's kind of he's a great dude and a great friend of mine, but he's kind of like the stereotypical, like, tough Chicago guy with a cigar kind of thing. And he's like, well, we're going to put you on the road, kid. And so I was just like, yeah, I'll do anything. You want me to drive, you know, 12 hours to Lincoln, Nebraska to play for 150 people as an opening act? Like, yes, I'll be there. Just sign me up. So I was opening for a band called Midlake, which is a great band.
They're great.
I know. Yeah. And they're friends of mine. They're Denton boys.
That Van Acky Panther album is fucking awesome.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it's a great record.
It was on that record. There was a lot of excitement behind that band, and that record was so good and so beautiful. And they have a new one out, too, that's really great. But we were in Minneapolis. We were playing the 7th Street Entry. Yeah. You know it well?
It's a good venue.
Yeah. It's the little room, you know, it's like the kind of the metal punk rock kind of room. And I don't know, I didn't have any crew or anything with me. It's just I was doing it solo. And something like, if you don't plug an amplifier and your pedals into the same like electrical outlet, there can be grounding issues. And then those issues can create like a massive electrical shock on the microphone.
Oh.
So I didn't have any crew. I was just kind of haphazardly going up there to open for them. And went up to sing, start the thing. I got this like massive shock in my face, and getting shocked in your face is really fucking sucks. I mean, it does.
Not it's a just, good place to get like, shocked.
It's,
yeah.
It's number two under genitals.
Yeah,
right, but very close.
Yeah, pretty close.
No, it really is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I know, because me and my friends found like an electronic thing once.
Shut up. Yeah, you shocked yourself in your genitals?
It was just like, yeah, it was just a weird night.
That's how they had to get off. It was a totally different type of a story. They were also in front of people.
We're experimenting. Totally we were 30.
So you got shocked in the face in front of 150 people.
I got shocked in the face, and then I was like trying to figure out what was wrong and whatever, and people started like, boo, and it was Friday night, people was beer, and people really wanting to see Midlake, and people just started yelling at me to like get off the stage.
Boo someone or getting shocked in the face.
It's also like Midlake is the type of band that
douchebag
like,
fans.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect that. Also, like that people would be aware enough to like, well, if she's opening up for him, most likely they know each other. Because it's not like, you know, they're just like, yeah, whoever the opener is, I don't give a shit.
Local
you know?
Opener, that's
yeah
real
exactly.
Thing.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so you're like,
were you able to finish the set?
I think I played like 3 songs and was like, oh fuck this!
Really? And you just left?
Yeah, well, yeah, because I mean, not because people were yelling at me, but because I don't know. I feel like I had to like put a sock over the like some gnarly SM58 that was just like the clubs, you know.
People probably thought you were kind of being a diva about it.
Totally.
Not knowing how bad you got shocked.
It was really, yeah. I mean, it sucked. It's painful. Yeah.
Are those stuck in there longer than, say, Cat Power would have? Cat Power would have fucking walked right off the stage.
Don't you think she would have lit her cigarette off the microphone? And yeah. Fuck you guys.
Crying.
Are house mics and music venues like house mics and comedy venues where they're super warped?
Yes.
And it just looks like, is this because this was dropped or so many people have spit on it over the years that it's just way
down? It starts to fall in on itself.
Warped. Yeah. It just looks like a super...
The microphone's trying
congealed.
To give up.
I used to carry alcohol wipes. You know, that was helpful. But some of those mics just smelled so much like halitosis and whiskey that you're like, oh, I just... Ooh. Yeah. I learned quick and I brought my own mic.
Brought your own mic.
There was a guy, Adam in his package. He would always, like, every show he would do, he would, like, bring out alcohol wipes and just wipe it down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and people would make fun of him. He's like, it's like, I'm on the road. I'm not going to get sick.
Yeah.
My friends, Tom Lennon in particular, who does a bit where he, like, deep throats a microphone and he just, like, smacks the microphone on his tongue, and every time I see him do it, I'm like, no, you're a petri dish.
Yeah. Why I remember one time I was sick, and I was, like, first on a show of, like, 8 comics, and, like, I got a napkin from the restaurant we were at, and then, like, when I went up, I put it over the microphone because I just, like, didn't want to get everybody else sick. Because you can't stop what's coming out once you're using the microphone.
No, you can't. Yeah. That was very thoughtful of you.
It really was.
Yeah, but then I messed up when I was, like, kind of, it was on cold mess, and I messed up. I took the mic off. I took the napkin off and I was like, oh, good night. And just went right back on it, probably negating everything I just did.
You fucked everything up.
I fucked everything up.
But then, when you come off stage after like 3 songs and fuck this, what happens? Do you go to the Midlake and be like, I'm sorry, the mic was, I'm going home.
Oh, well, those guys are so nice and they were very sympathetic. I don't remember I remember that dressing room being like most dressing rooms and clubs, like down a long, scary corridor that has graffiti in it. And like, you can smoke in there. It's just like, and there are couches that just no one should ever.
Hey, kid, be careful walking down to the dressing room. If people get killed.
Yeah.
Like, oh God.
Why don't you? Why don't you patrol that? Why would you let that happen?
It's out of my hands.
Yeah.
Union guy, I gotta walk the stage.
Yeah.
It's not my problem.
I don't know where the hallway guy went. He's been gone for years.
So when did? So when you finish a show like that and you're sort of like, how do you deal with that kind of a show? Are you over it pretty quickly, or do you? Does it take like a day or two to sort of shake it off?
I would say like it's a night ruiner, but it's not like a next day ruiner.
Yeah.
It's like.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
You've toured with a ton of really great, I did a podcast with Tim DeLauder, but what happened was it was at the El Rey, and almost immediately when we started talking, the opening band started sound checking.
Oh, damn.
And there was no place to go, so we tried to talk through it, and after a half hour we gave up. I was never able to release it because it was so... Mm. It was so loud, and there was just no place to go. But he seemed like a perfectly sweet guy.
He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, yeah. Polyphonic Spree.
Yeah, yeah. And he was the leader.
Tripping Daisy.
And Tripping Daisy, too.
Yes. Yeah. I love that band.
Yeah.
Are you from Dallas?
No. But I just know bands.
Because I could never tell with Tripping Daisy if it was like... I mean, obviously they were from Dallas. So they were really big in Dallas. But I didn't know how far their reach
went. Well, they had I Got a Girl?
Yeah.
That's a fun... it's weird. I just pulled that song up the other day. I was like, I haven't heard I Got a Girl by Tripping Daisy in a while. A sentence that's rarely been said.
Yeah.
Manifested a new reality.
Yeah. We're going to start the Tripping Daisy reboot movement. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to come back.
Yeah.
Well,
oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh
yeah.
It's
I guess
one of those.
Not really gonna work.
Did they come up to stage, listening to Ween's "Pushing Little Daisy" and make them come up?
I don't think they did come on to "Pushing Little Daisies." No.
Is it an intro song?
No.
Another band song?
Another
no.
It says Daisy.
No. Two on the nose. What would happen is no one would get it, and they'd come out and be like, "Did you hear that? Come on,
ladies and gentlemen, not Ween."
Yeah.
Typically, bands don't like to be played on with other bands. It's music the way comics do.
I know. I just have someone put on a Bill Cosby record when I go up on stage. Yeah.
But it's, you know, before when you said like, of course, most people like comedy. I think most people like to laugh.
Oh right.
But I don't know if everyone really, you know, it's comedy. I would say is maybe not quite as diverse as music, but it's fairly the subsets of comedy. The subgenres of comedy are pretty specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just hearing all the people that you're like right in the sweet spot of all of the people that I love too.
Oh, good.
So
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
How did you get that John Darnielle spot?
or that Ted Leo spot?
He's a good dude. Those are good dudes.
Those are great dudes.
Yeah.
Really great dudes.
Yeah.
So at this point, do you? Because I feel like you've got some pull to sort of do the kind of stuff, you know, like probably more of the stuff that you always wanted to do. So do you sort of look around and go, who would I want to work with, or who would I want to reach out to them, or how does that sort of stuff come together?
You mean in terms of music collaborations?
Yeah,
like
David Byrne or any of it. So did he approach you, or did you just say, hey, I like David Byrne,
your music, go on a jam?
Just in a bar, hey man.
I was like, I've got a djembe and a gig bag. Let's do this.
That's all I need.
No, I did see a guy with a djembe and a gig bag the other day.
Mm.
Yeah, and it made me feel sad, and then I felt like an asshole for feeling sad, because he's probably wonderful at that djembe, and it brings him so much joy.
Sure, yeah, it's a real complicated instrument to master.
Oh, yeah. Come on. No, why you gotta be a dick?
Sorry.
Djembe.
I'm sorry. Oh, no. Yeah, exotic Congo is what that is.
David and I met in at a charity event in New York. We met at Dark Was the Night about 9 years ago, 2009. So whatever that was, 5 years ago.
Okay,
I think.
Yeah, it was 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Wait, and what's Dark Was the Night? I'm sorry.
It's an AIDS charity. They put out music compilations people covering other people's songs. Like I think the new one coming out is like Arthur Russell. But this one was original songs, like kind of duets by people. Oh. And David was performing at it, and I performed at it a little bit. And we met at the after party, and he came up and he told me that my video for Actor Out of Work was really creepy. And I was so touched, like so flattered by that.
When the guy from Talking Heads tells you that your video's creepy, that's a huge honor.
Yeah. You know, I felt like, wow. And then, as luck would have it, like, four nights later, there was yet another AIDS charity event at this place called Housing Works in New York City. It's like a bookstore. They have thrift stores around. And but Bjork and the Dirty Projectors were doing a night of music. Like,
oh, wow.
They had collaborated on some songs, like, you know, maybe 20, 25, 30 minutes worth of music. And David and I were also at that after party. And the people from Housing Works approached us and asked if we wanted to do, like, a similar night of music together.
Oh, shit.
So we said, yeah,
real,
sure.
Real natural, real, like, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Then it grew because, let's think. We wrote maybe four songs, and I think I suggested we do it with a brass band just because I was thinking of the space. It's a small space, and there's not a lot of PA, and I thought, well, maybe it could just be a small brass ensemble and then us singing and then, you know, call it a day.
So you suggested arrangements to David Byrne.
I did. I had to pretend like he wasn't David Byrne.
Yeah.
I understand. I know exactly what you mean.
You know?
I know exactly what you mean.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Just two musicians.
Yeah. It's a good life skill, I think, to pretend like you have confidence when you're terrified.
Until you make it. Yeah. But that's an interesting way into finding confidence and comfort with someone, which is rather than trying to force yourself to be comfortable, just go, oh, they're not that like, to basically take away the power that they have over you to just, like, deal with them like a problem. I mean, we've had that, you know, we've had to do that on the podcast before.
Who?
Times.
Tell me who.
Well, Mel Brooks.
Whoa!
Yeah, that was one. Tom Hanks.
Mel Brooks,
just,
Tom Hanks.
Because it's like the podcast only really works if we're just hanging out and chit-chatting.
Joan Rivers.
Yeah. Christopher Lloyd.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Harrison Ford. We failed at that one.
Yeah.
You did? Did you nerd out on him?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
But he didn't let us in. So there was nothing else we could do. That's what I realized. There was nothing else for us to do except for, hey, you're great.
He was just that guarded.
Yeah. Well, it's just he sort of revels in watching people flounder a little bit. Like, to him, that's very entertaining.
Yeah, I'm sure for him and his friends, it was a fucking blast.
So, imagine you're standing on a balcony and there's a guy, like, gripping with one hand. Like, please, a little help.
Yeah.
And they're just like, hey, that's a long way down there. Like, that's sort of what it felt like. But, you know, all in all, it was super fun. But, yeah, it's getting into those moments where you're like, oh, we're just, you know, that's a person and he has a process and he's human and, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are a couple of people I don't think I'd be able to hold it together for, though.
Who?
Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Steve Martin would be another one. But just like guys where you just, there's so much of a legend surrounding them that how do you talk to them without sounding, I mean, I imagine Bill Murray's life is like Groundhog Day. Where everyone, every day, people are just like, oh my God, Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can say to him.
That's the thing he says about fame. It's a 24-hour day job.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just having to go, like, be, like at any moment, just have to do these kind of small little jobs of like, hey, how you doing? I'm engaging you right now.
How is it for you, like, in your day-to-day life?
Oh, my day-to-day life is really mellow. People come up to me on the street, you know, sometimes, and say, hey, I really like your record. And I say, thank you so much. What's your name? How are you doing? And then that's the end of the interaction. I don't like Google myself or like subject myself to the horrors of the internet, internet in that
good
way.
For
so,
you.
It's good on you.
No, I can't do it. Yeah, I can't do it. I'll be.
But you are on Twitter.
Nervous wreck. Yeah, I'm on Twitter, but Twitter relies on like public shame, the public shame that civilizes us. Like it's not an anonymous thing. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that fucking, you know, that's the tone of voice I imagine on like.
I hope they just spelled out, fucking.
They're just like their keyboard splattered with cum they can't.
Hashtag.
That's what I imagine it to be.
No, mwah was a good thing, you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can't read an emotion.
I didn't know how else to convey it.
Come on. Yeah, because you have a shit ton of people following you on the tweets these days.
I do, yeah. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to pull back the curtain too much. But it was like some kind of Twitter bug where I was on their homepage, just like, people you might like to follow for like fucking 2 years. So
that's great.
So I think, I mean, I'm sure that there's a legit number of people of those like 420,000 people that are like fans. Mm-hmm. You know, like I might put that number at 60,000, but the rest of them I think are mostly people who like signed up for Twitter in 2008 and then forgot their password. And,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Spam bots.
Spam bots, exactly.
There's a spam bot. There's a spam bot contingency as well.
Yeah. What is that?
I don't know, but a lot. But the spam bots are getting smarter and smarter because they're getting more and more conversational.
Hmm.
Where it almost seems sort of personal until they're like, and thanks for that new diet tip. Oh, you almost got me to click on the thing.
You're always doling out diet tips.
Well, the first time it got me, it almost got me. That's how your account gets fished. You click on a link and then it links to your Twitter account. But you got to be really careful. But I wrote a book where there is a section about like nutrition. And so someone's like, oh, you're going to do diet tip. And I was like, oh, someone read the book. And I went to click and I went, wait a minute. And I clicked on their profile and it was just all of that tweet to a bunch of different people.
Oh.
So
wait, what are you talking about? Like your account gets fished. And do you spell that with a PH?
With a PH.
Yeah, it just starts jamming.
No, it's starts okay. It's a long jam band that
exactly.
will end.
Just like tweet after tweet.
Lots of weed.
Wanking off.
Yeah.
You know. Ugh.
Yep.
So indulgent.
Yeah.
Well, it can... some malware can gain access to your Twitter account.
Oh, no.
And tweet on your behalf or... so you just have to be careful what links you click on. I change my password every few months.
That's a good idea.
It's a good thing to do.
I would do that if I remember.
And it's also a good idea to go into your settings and see what applications you've given permission to access your Twitter account. And you might find that some of them you didn't access. So you just want to make sure that it's, you know, you go into settings and you go into like, I think it's apps, and then it'll tell you what third-party software your Twitter account is linked to.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm going to do that.
It's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with more Twitter talk.
Fuck you, Jonah. It was like a minute of Twitter talk.
I know. I'm sorry.
Like 1 minute. I'm going to say really great Twitter advice, as a matter of fact. You had to shit on it.
As far as Twitter advice goes, the most practical I've ever heard.
Don't make it sound sterile. It's good.
No, it was great.
It's good. Thank you.
I hadn't talked for a while. I needed to hear my voice. Sorry.
I needed to hear my voice would be a great name for a comedy album. That would be the best name for a comedy album.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I love Moshe Kasher's idea for like he wants to write a book about being a road comic called I Thought I Wanted This.
Well, yeah, okay, good.
It's
a perfect transition going
segway.
Back into the because do you tour bus it or do you fly in and fly out?
Oh, I tour bus it. I mean, it depends if it's like a if it's physically impossible to get there in a bus the night. But usually it's like, I'll tour the U.S. and it's in a bus and then this is so boring. I just started boring myself.
It's not boring yet.
I'm so sorry.
It's not boring.
But, like, but it's nice compared to a van, which I'm sure you've toured.
I've
in
toured
vans
in so many
or
vans.
Station wagons.
Yep. I have toured in a station wagon, a minivan, a station wagon, and then, like 12-seater, whatever.
Now, are you able to write when you're on the road, or are you too much in the mode of, like, just getting through the shows?
No, I'm just trying to, like, you know, keep my head above water. Like, touring is a lot easier for me now because there is a bus. It's not a van tour. You're not spending, like, 8 hours driving from whatever, Des Moines to Akron. I don't know if those two places are 8 hours apart.
I have no
but
idea.
Whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a little more comfortable now, so I can be more like prepared for the show mentally and just have a little bit of time in the day that isn't spent in a car. But no, I don't really write on the road. There's not that time to like synthesize it and take it out and, you know, put things together. It's more like collecting ideas, just storing up.
What do you mainly write on when you're like writing music or ideas?
Oh my God, I have a melody. I've got to get it before it goes away. I'll
record
it into my iPhone.
Thing or just sing it into it?
Sing it into my iPhone for if it's of like a kind of vocal melody. And then I'll write on guitar. I'll write... Sometimes I just open GarageBand and like type notes into the using the keyboard.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah, that's fun.
How annoying if you were a musician in like the 30s and you were just out and you're like, I have a melody. Yeah. I have no way to capture this. Yeah.
I know. I guess because I can't write down music or read it really. So that would be the way you'd have to do it, I guess. It's just like write, transcribe it in musical notes.
You have to get some kid on the street. Timmy, remember this. Na, 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 na. Run home and tell my wife.
Well, you know, that's how Mel Brooks wrote all of his songs. He would have like a cassette recorder or some kind of recording device and like would go, and it goes, young Frankenstein. Like, it just, he would sing it and like, and then give it to a composer to figure out.
Yeah,
that's how he would write all the songs, like all the songs that like high anxiety, everything.
Wow.
Does do you think success affects the writing part at all? I mean, do you feel like you need to be a little? Do you have any sort of like weird superstitions about? Oh, if I'm comfortable, if I'm not hungry, then maybe I won't write as much, or maybe the themes won't be as deep because I'm comfortable. Like,
yeah,
just sort of being an expression of what your immediate environment is.
No, I know what you're saying. I mean, there's a lot of gradation to it. So if I'm like, you know, when I was writing my last solo record, Strange Mercy, I had a very bad year of life where I like lost people, and it was very sad, and and so I did what a good Irish girl would do, and I drank my way through it. And then I came out the other side of it a little bit about 3 months later. And then I started to sort of slowly write. But, like, if you're really down and out, I can't write like that. I don't know if you guys can. Like, depression is not a good place to write from.
I try to force my way through it a little bit. I actually... My dad died last year, and I was... Oh, that's okay. You didn't kill him. And then I did a...
Check her off the list. I'm trying to figure it out, Chris.
They said heart attack, but somewhere there's a guy, a tiny, tiny person. I did stand up like 2 days after the funeral. 3 days after the funeral, I went up and performed because I just like needed to sort of like... And I think that is... That makes me happy to be on the comedy side of the comedy music fence, because with music, you're like, oh, I got to write this thing and rehearse it, and, you know, as opposed to, I mean, could you just go up and riff something, or would you need to kind of work out the beats of it before you went on stage with it?
Well, I could maybe kind of riff it, but it would be a little bit like a uncomfortable jazz odyssey. I mean, it would, you know, I'd be like...
Which is the name of your next album.
Jazz odyssey. It might be a little fishy, you know. Yeah. No disrespect. Those guys are very hardworking.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course, yes.
But that's interesting. I mean, I had another friend who recently, similar story, like his father passed and he had a gig like the next day, and the band was saying, no, don't worry about it. We'll find a sub. Don't worry. He's like, no, I need to play.
Yeah.
Like it. And did it help? Was it cathartic to
yes,
do it?
Yes, it was, because, you know, there's something about, I mean, the really great, oh, this is going to sound so douchey, one of the really great things about comedy is just this, or at least the illusion that we're kind of taking control of something by being able to find what's funny and human about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so on that level, it was really, I didn't really have a plan as to what I was going to say. I knew I was going to talk about some things in general, like how ridiculous funerals are and wakes and, you know, all this stuff. And it was really great. Like, it was really great because it, you know, like, there was a piece of the audience. It wasn't therapy, per se.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, and then that time that we didn't play catch. You know, like, there was nothing like that.
But you know what it was? It was like a thought organizer for you. It helped you kind of, like, assess and separate everything that was going on as to think of jokes for him, or think, you know, funny ways to talk about
You're right.
Him.
I'm glad he's dead.
No.
But I'm kidding. It really just helped to, it was sort of the first time where I really felt like, oh, this needs to come out in a certain way, and I don't know how that's going to play out. But when I did, it made me feel so much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
Did you have it organized ahead of time and then go out there and riff? Or was it one of those things you ever find where you are like, I don't really know what I think about this until I start opening my fucking mouth, and then everything, like, oh, wow, that's my opinion.
That's right. Yeah, that's it. I mean, there were, you know, there were beats where I would say, like, well, this was kind of weird, and this is very strange about that and this, but I didn't exactly know how those beats were going to come out, and I didn't really know how I was going to get from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of just hoped, like, well, I've done this for a long time, so if I just start talking, hopefully it'll spit out these hay bales of, you know, whatever this is. And, you know, it didn't all kill, but it still felt, I mean that word, but it still all, it still felt like, oh, there's something there and there's something kind of gushy in there that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, so yeah, from that standpoint, it was amazing. So when you say that you came out of this really tough year and you wrote the previous album, did that help you take control over it? And
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and getting to play that music and kind of coming, you know, songs start to, I'm sure it's a similar thing with comedy. Like, you know, you write it in one state and it means kind of one thing to you. And then you end up, you know, performing it for people and it moves and it changes, obviously, because it's reacting with, yeah, with other people. But your own feelings toward it and your own maybe even point of view within it changes. So I found that it's a potentially corny thing to say, but I mean it absolutely literally, like music saved my life, you know? And that's what I think, that's why I feel like there is some common thread between musicians and comedians. Like I think that there is some like psychic wound that we just share. Like there's like a self-loathing or a whatever it is that compels people to get up on stage and say, hey, listen to what I have to say. Yeah. Like, that's a crazy thing. Like, it takes self-delusion.
God, that's so funny that you say that. I was just... First of all, I completely agree. And I just... do you know Morgan Murphy? She's a comedian.
Oh, I know of her. I don't know her.
So Morgan's an old friend of ours from the old... Like, we'd all did open mics together a decade ago. But I did the podcast with Morgan last night. We were talking about that exact thing where people say, like, oh, it's really brave that you could do comedy. And it's like, I don't think it's that. I think there's something warped about us that makes us want to get up in front of strangers and be like...
We just have the wherewithal
like
to
me.
Not go on
Look
the
at
street.
This. Yeah. Hey, attention.
Hey.
Yeah. You know, that it's a very weird... Not like I like reasons. There's like a wound or something damaged.
I mean, maybe that's painting it with
no.
Too
I totally
black a
think
brush,
that's what it
like,
is.
It's not what we can offer the world. It's what they can offer us.
But there is kind of like a, you know, there is. I mean, because on the one hand, if it was just about expression, then you would just write your songs and you would sing them to yourself in your apartment.
Absolutely.
But there's something else about it that makes you want to throw it out into the world and then just like see what comes back or see how it can sort of meld with, you know, whatever kind of energy is out there in the room. And I think that's a different kind of thing that I think freaks out a lot of bands when they get really big and are like, oh, I didn't mean it. You know, this is bigger than what I had thought it was.
Yeah.
The benefit I think that we have though is that versus like you'll write a song which is essentially, I assume, like an emotional snapshot of whatever was going on when you wrote that song, and then like you said, your opinion on it may change or your point of view on it may change, and that may not go in a good direction, but there's probably still an expectation when you play that people are like, play that. Like when we perform, people don't go, do that joke from O2, like, you know,
right? Yeah.
We constantly get to, hopefully we should be like updating material every year or two.
I mean, kind of back to your question about like feeling ownership of it. I mean, once it's out in the world, I'm happy for people to like just put their own meaning and weave it into their lives and have it mean whatever it means to them and have it be special. So I don't feel like, oh, no, let me explain this song to you. That's not what I intended. It's like, okay, no, now is the time for you to just back off. But yeah, I don't have too many songs that like... There's a couple songs, I mean, for my first record that like I wouldn't play because I can't emotionally access whatever or like, you know, I'm proud of everything I've done, but it's like, oh no, that sounds like a show tune. I'm not going to play that song, you know, that just is not going to fit
but
in.
But a lot of your early stuff was you wrote when you were like 18, right?
Yeah, I was a kid.
So anyone like, you know, dig up your diary from when you were 18. And then,
you know, I was just talking to Matt Pryor, who is the singer-songwriter from this band, the Get Up Kids. And you know,
oh, I know the Get Up Kids. Yeah.
So I was talking to him, and you know, he was talking about how like, do you feel the need to write new stuff all the time? And I said, yeah, but what about you? Like, you know, he's like, oh, well, like I have to play a song from the first Get Up Kids record that I have no emotional attachment to whatsoever anymore. But like, what he's done is he's turned it into another kind of emotion where he knows if he starts playing it, the crowd's going to get really excited. Aww. So for him now, he doesn't think about the lyrics from when he wrote it and what they meant. He knows that the song itself will like make the crowd excited. So now that's the energy he gets from playing the song. That's how it makes it feel new and fresh.
Or you could, just play it totally. I mean, I saw Elvis Costello at Royce Hall once, and he played Watching the Detectives like as like a reggae song or something, and it just totally it changed the song. And when I was watching as a comic, I was like, I wonder if he's doing that because he just needs to like, keep it fresh somehow to himself and try stuff in a new way.
Did the crowd go for it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Oh, good.
I mean, everything he did, everyone was just shitting their pants.
Every time I've seen Eels play, they do a different version of every song. It's like it's never been the same show. The banter, the setting, the way they play the songs, it's different every single time.
Yeah, but fuck them because E used to date my girlfriend.
Yeah. That guy fuck that bearded motherfucker.
She has a fucking E tattoo on her ankle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
It does for me.
Wait, before he dated her after you?
No, after. We're still together. What are you talking about?
Wait, who?
He dated her before me.
He dated Chloe?
Yes.
Like, fuck.
I know. She's considerably younger than he is.
Man, Chloe's really cool.
Fuck it.
Man, to go from like the saddest guy to the most upbeat guy, that must be a weird change.
I'm not upbeat all the time, Jonah.
But no, like compared to E, he seems like he's a pretty sour grumpus.
Well, he is, but you know, his father was a brilliant physicist.
Yes, his father was believed to be assassinated. There's a whole Nova Science Now documentary about him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There was like, he would say stuff all the time about, hey, if like I die under any kind of like odd circumstances, just know that it was most likely I was murdered.
Holy shit.
He wasn't a paranoid schizophrenic?
No, he wasn't. He was just working on, unlimited free energy for everybody.
Oh my God. Yeah. The water engine.
That still doesn't make her tattoo on her foot cool.
It could be. Maybe she's way into the E network.
The E network.
Or just E, the number E, like the number E.
Yeah, exactly.
We should have him on sometime and I'll just interrogate him. So, what happened?
Take good care of her, man. Going over
could
to Chloe's
house. Could you just pull the beard
house back?
I can't hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I was like, oh, hold on. Hello.
Novocaine for the soul.
Now you understand.
Do you, not to get too personal, but do you date non-artist types, or do you feel like you date within the, you know, like, music community, or what are you typically...
I think you kind of have to date people who understand what you do.
Yes.
Like, I don't think it ever works for anybody to be on tour and have someone like waiting at home.
Oh, right.
You know, like,
you were out pretty late last
year. Yeah, exactly.
I'm a performer. I was doing two shows.
Yeah.
But it's tricky though, because, you know, you could end up seeing that person more, if they don't really have like an artist lifestyle like you. It's like, you know, like with my wife, it's like she does animation. So I'll have to go out and then she has to go and stay inside and animate for, you know, weeks at a time, and then it makes it so we can't really see each other, as if though if she was done with her work day, she could just go out and hang out and stuff like that.
Who does she animate for?
She's at a studio called Six Point Harness right now. Uh-huh. They're working on Cosmos, the new Cosmos.
Like Carl Sagan Cosmos?
Yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson
redid it.
Are you serious?
I mean, he didn't redo it. He just did a new version.
That
is
so cool.
Executive producer, Seth MacFarlane.
Strange, yeah?
Very strange.
He's going to be on Fox, too, I think.
Fox.
Is Seth MacFarlane a comics comic? Like, what's his vibe?
I don't know if he's a comics comic. He just kind of has his own sort of thing.
Yeah.
He just has his own sort of thing.
Okay.
I don't... He was a performer that made a... Like, he was like a sketch performer kind of guy that made a cartoon.
Was a writer. Well, he worked on, like, Johnny Bravo. Like, he worked at Nickelodeon. Yeah. Cartoon Network.
Johnny Bravo.
Yeah, it was an old Cartoon Network show.
Okay.
About this...
I missed that one.
Yeah.
It was late 90s. And he was sort of a... He was sort of like a detective, maybe? No, just a ladies' man, sort of like an Elvis Presley type of a Elvis Presley wannabe.
That's a cartoon for children.
Yeah, I know.
He's just a ladies' man?
Yeah.
Is that like Sim City, the cartoon or something?
No. It was I don't know. It was just a silly little comedy, and Seth wrote on that, and he then pitched his own shows, and then it just...
Speaking of the Honeymooners, his Family Guy has that kind of vibe, right?
Totally, it has that kind of vibe. But it's the it's very referential. Like, that show is, I mean, like, even more so than The Simpsons, I would say.
Yes, it's mostly it's just a sketch show is what it is. It's like, you know, it's like that one time this one premise happened. Cut to the joke for that premise. Right, back to the story.
I gotta say, the trailer for A Million Ways to Die in the Old West looks pretty fucking
looks
funny.
Pretty fucking funny.
Wait, what is that? Is that an
animated? It's a live action movie that he's starring in.
With Charlize Theron as a, it's a comedy, it's a Western comedy.
Yeah.
Wow. Is Charlize Theron the love interest?
She is.
Oh, so that's what happens when you, when you're the executive producer
again,
and
like
the creator.
Okay. You know, like fucking a Jackie Gleason type probably would not get an Audrey Meadows type.
Yeah.
And then be able to boss her around in their efficiency apartment.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think so.
It's not really, but that's the old television. But it's like what you said with Louis, like the you know, the that sort of sitcom American dream, like fat guy, skinny wife kind of a thing.
Yeah,
you know, and she's 20 years younger and she's beautiful, and he's kind of a pig, but she loves him for who he is. That's ultimately the American dream. We just want a really hot girl to fucking love me for who I am, which is a pig.
Which is a pig, right? But I'm tired of having sex with her.
Okay. That's an odd thing. Like, it's like TV for the most part. You're just like you know, like I feel like I'm happily married. But like, it's like me and my wife. It's always like, are we supposed to like hate each other like and not get along? It's like oh, the wife. Oh boy.
I'll tell you what I think. And since we're let's just get a little real on the situation.
On the Nerdist podcast.
Shut up. So I'll tell you what I think that is born out of. I think that whole idea of like. I think it comes from the same generation of, like, hate your job, but do it anyway.
Got it.
It's like people married young because they didn't really date. Like, my father was married a bunch of times, and he said, it wasn't that I wanted to be married a bunch of times. It's just if you met someone you liked, it was socially acceptable to just marry them. You didn't really date for a long period of time because it was sort of, like, you couldn't really living together was even kind of weird, and so you just married someone. So people would get married young, and they were sort of – society sort of said, like, you're supposed to stay together no matter what. And so I think they would sort of realize through their 20s, like, oh, you know, like you do. Oh, we're not right for each other. I should probably have a different relationship. Right. But they stay together, and then ultimately this, like, comfortable resentment bubble was formed. And I think that's where a lot of that sort of came from.
Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah.
Exactly. But we don't have to do that anymore.
Right, it seems anachronistic now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It seems like the worst idea.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're going to have kids, I don't really see...
Why you get married?
Why you get married?
I know.
If you don't, you know.
That's a blast. We get tax breaks now? Oh, it's the best. Love it.
How much of a tax break do you get?
About to find out. But from what I've been told, it's going to be okay.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Also, what I will say, though, it does put like a nice, like, think about like the best moments in any relationship you've had, and then you get married, and then it's like all the little arguments just kind of get glazed over because you're like, I'm not going to fill out paperwork over this thing. It's just,
oh yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're in it.
Yeah, you're in it. I'm not going to. It's
all
like
right, I don't like that.
Yeah, it's great.
Do you like if you're in a relationship with someone? Do you like having them on the road with you, or do you prefer like you know this is my work time and I'll see you when I get home?
It depends on the tour. Maybe I don't know. I know that I've been on tours where, like, you know, a bandmate has had a significant other around, and sometimes it is totally great and fun and fine, and then sometimes there's fighting, and then there's, like, a it permeates the van, like an open bag of Doritos, and, is it like a bad scene?
Your love is like an open bag of Doritos.
Now it just smells like Cool Ranch in here.
That is honestly, it's the worst. You know, obviously they're amazing, but if you open that in an enclosed space, it's a world of hurt for everyone. Yeah.
Are you talking about the relationship or the Doritos?
Oh, both, actually.
I honestly didn't know.
I was talking about the Doritos.
Over that. The guy would open up a bag of Doritos. She'd go, again with the Doritos.
Right.
Please, we have a show.
You know what they're called in France? Cool American.
What?
Funny, that's what I'm called in France.
No, you're not anywhere.
No.
Nope. All right,
cool.
Yeah, because ranch dressing doesn't mean anything.
Oh, right.
It's a very American, it's fucking mayonnaise and
And then chives? I don't know. What is ranch?
I don't know. I think ranch is just that's just what America sweats out. Like, yeah. I don't know what else ranch dressing is.
Yeah.
But you're from the Midwest, right?
I'm from Texas. Well,
oh, you're from the South.
I'm originally from Tulsa.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
But yeah, which is Midwestern and Southern and kind of its own strange world. And then I grew up in Texas, though, so I'm mostly.
What part of Texas?
Dallas? Are you from Dallas?
No, but I'm from I feel like you just want one of us to be from Dallas. Yeah, yeah. Are you from Dallas? Are you from Dallas? No. We're not from Dallas. I do like Dallas, though. I think Dallas is an okay place.
Yeah.
I had fun there one night.
It was yesterday. I was at a meeting for a thing I'm doing. It was like a fashion people and a bunch of French people. And I got asked, like, oh, where are you from? And I said, Dallas. And they went, oh, which was the biggest like reaction I'd ever heard from anybody. Wow. Dallas never gets that kind of reaction.
And they just were fascinated by that?
They were like, oh, they loved it. They loved Dallas.
Isn't it kind of a big fashion place now, isn't it? Because of the amount of rich people that live in Dallas?
There is money there. But you know what's an interesting factoid? I was talking to a lady who was... I think she did she worked at one of the big high-end department stores and did the buying for different places. And she was saying that in Dallas, dresses don't sell very well. Like separates sell better, like a shirt with a skirt, because so many women have breast implants that you can't sell a size if you're a woman who would be like a size 4, but she has like, you know, double
weird.
D's or whatever.
Oh,
you can't
wow.
fit into a size 4.
That's the kind of Freakonomics data that I love hearing.
Isn't that cool?
Because clothes were changed forever.
The reason that I like Dallas is because I've just had a lot of good shows there. Like, I used to perform in Addison at the Improv in Addison,
yeah.
which is really good. But then, I can't remember, I did a little theater thing the last time I was there.
Last time we did a nerd show there, was that the one that was a dubstep show going on next door?
Yeah.
Or was that Houston?
No, that was I don't remember anymore. They all blend together. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. But it was I don't know. It seemed like a good vibe. But but that part of Texas was described to me as like home of the $30,000 millionaire. Like
that is, yeah, that's what they say.
People make like 30 to 50 grand, but they'll drive like a a Mercedes and you know,
absolutely.
Like they spend their money on material stuff.
I feel like that's kind of like here where there's people. Like wear their cars.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's like getting a Jaguar.
Shut up! I was shut up. I just
shut up. I'm just saying facts, Chris. It's weird that you would just be so angry at me for saying.
I did. Okay, look, I did. But you know, we spend so much time in our cars here.
I get it. No, I get
okay,
it.
Good.
I get it.
That's why I got a good, reliable Honda.
My Hyundai Elantra in the budget rental car I have is totally understands your Jaguar.
Do you live in New York now?
Yeah, I do.
So you don't even need to have a car.
I don't need to have a car. Well, I split my time between New York and Texas because that's where my family is, and I have little nieces and nephews that I like.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
But when you're in New York, you're just riding bikes with David Byrne?
I am, actually.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's great.
No, David got me super into cycling. Like,
I would be terrified to ride a bike in New York.
No, it's easy. It's the best way to get around. It really is.
I saw him riding his bike down the street once when I was in New York, and it was just like, I was like, this is one of the most beautiful moments of my life. It was just like the nicest thing. Just like real sharp looking, just a real sharp looking older gentleman on a bicycle. But they got the grates in there. I get scared of those.
The grates?
Like the sewer grates.
Oh, like you would, like the tire would get stuck or you...
Yeah, because like there's some of them are... parallel with the direction of the street as opposed to perpendicular where you wouldn't get sucked in.
Oh, would you have like a thin tired fixie or something?
Yeah, well, you would have a thinner tire, I think, because you're on streets. So you kind of need, you know, that, right?
Yeah,
you're riding a mountain bike?
I guess
BMX?
No.
Yeah, and he's doing BMX.
Yeah.
You bunny hopping over cars?
Yeah, exactly.
Send me an angel.
Rad.
I've just seen people get hit on things, and so I instantly go like, that'd be me.
And like car doors, there's a lot of that. I've seen that happen a couple times in New York, just like someone going down the street and then a guy not paying attention, open up a car door.
By the way, we're doing to you right now what my mom does to me whenever I say I want to do something. Well, here's 9 ways that should kill you. Thanks for sucking all the fun juice out of that one.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to protect you. Thank you. I feel very well protected now. I'm afraid of those things that I wasn't previously. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for the gift.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine, though.
So when you say music saved your life, do you feel like you're better adjusted as a human being now since having music? Or do you feel like, you know, whenever you evolve, there's all this whole new set of sort of things that you have to overcome.
Well, I'd say I'm better adjusted because I have an outlet for that which one can't or doesn't or won't like express in just daily life.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say like it's given me my life. Like I'm a kid from the suburbs. I'm sure I would have had a somewhat pleasant and maybe boring life. Like I'd be a history teacher or something in Dallas. I think I would have been hellaciously unhappy if I didn't play music, you know?
Well, your family is musical, right?
Sort of. My uncle is an amazing guitar player named Tuck Andress. He's of a jazz duo called Tuck and Patty.
I am familiar with Tuck and Patty.
You are.
And I can't remember why I know Tuck and Patty, but I know Tuck and Patty.
They had kind of a breakout moment in the early 90s. They had late 80s, I want to say. They did a really beautiful cover of Cyndi Lauper's Time After Time, maybe? Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe, yeah.
Have you ever covered any Cyndi Lauper songs?
No. Yes, but with Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, fuck, come
Jesus
on.
Christ.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Which one?
Which Cyndi Lauper?
Oh, my God. Fuck, what is the one that Prince wrote? It's so good. Da-na-na, When You Were Mine.
Oh, When You Were Mine, yeah. Have you heard Prince's version of that one, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
That's so good.
They're both good.
Yeah.
Time After Time is great. True Colors is a fucking great song.
Well, that's a beautiful one. Although, in my mind, I'm thinking of, like, the 80s Kodak commercial.
Oh,
that's
shit.
I know.
Yeah, that's true.
Which wasn't a bad commercial, but I guess...
No, but it's still, like, a commercial... Because when you hear a song, you want to run a certain kind of emotional movie in your head.
Yeah.
And when that's overtaken, sort of like, you know, like, you're like, oh, if I hear this one Led Zeppelin song, I just see a Cadillac. Rock and roll.
Exactly. Or like the Misfits with that Sailor Jerry commercial. That's just an odd thing for me now.
It's just that reprograms like what you see in your head.
Yeah. Right.
That you don't have the ability anymore. So I totally understand that. But I do think you could sing the shit out of True Colors. You know,
thanks.
It's just something to think about at some point. You did I saw you in, it was sort of like, webcams in a studio, and I feel like you covered a Radiohead song, but I can't remember.
Oh, is that for AV Club Undercover?
Did you cover a Radiohead song? I thought you covered a Radiohead song.
I don't think I did, because here's the only reason why, is that I don't know how to play any Radiohead songs.
Because they're weird? I mean, like, their time signatures are all weird.
It's weird. You know, it's great music, but it's the kind of thing that, like, a frat boy with an acoustic guitar playing Radiohead is, like, the worst thing.
You know what? You're right. For my whole life, I thought it was Sublime songs. But to think about it now, you're right. Radiohead is the worst.
I would love to hear Tom York cover, like, What I Got or something by Sublime.
Probably wouldn't even understand or recognize the song.
I feel like that's what would tear the fabric of the universe in half.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd all just get sucked into this vortex. I guess I'm crazy. I for some reason, I thought. But it was... It was like this studio, and there were basically instruments everywhere. There was space, and you were just like squished in, and you were singing. But now I can't remember what that was.
Did I do that? I mean, you know what? It's entirely possible that I did that, and I don't remember. Like, was it a band, or was it just me?
You were like sitting in with other people, but I don't remember what it was.
Was it a circular room? Was it the AV Club stuff?
What? I know what it was. Was it with Beck and Os Mutantes? Was it INXS?
Oh, maybe. Did you cover an INXS song?
I did. We covered a whole INXS album.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we covered Kick, which has so many hits. Yeah. So many hits.
Such a great stack.
Such
great
a great
album.
Record.
Stacked
record.
You got
so
I Need You Tonight on there. You got Mediate on there. Devil Inside.
Yes, Devil Inside's a good one.
Yep.
Did any of them skateboard?
No.
Because there's just a video. There's like a ollie happening on the cover of that album, right? Is that the album?
No.
I think it's like a... No, now I'm thinking of Madonna. It's like a lady's torso?
Is it?
I don't know.
I thought some way.
Now I got to hear that entire you covered the entire album. No, Kyle just made a note of that.
Yeah. It was cool. It was way cool. It was Beck did a thing for a while called Record Club, and it's where like he gets bands that he likes together, and then he produces and plays like, so in my, and they, we cover like a record, a classic record, and we did In Excess Kick, and it was, is that right? Did I just say the right word? Kick?
I think so.
Okay. And it was Beck, and it was Os Mutantes, who I love, Sergio from Os Mutantes, and the Liars, who were Bitchin', and then me. I don't think there was anybody else. Yeah, that was it.
That's fantastic.
It was really fun. It was like 4 years ago.
Oh, man. Yeah. So we should. Can you email that to me if you find it? So that I don't have to spend time Googling things.
Yeah, see, there's a sweet Ollie happening on the cover.
Sure
of. Yeah.
Oh.
I don't think that's any of them.
Cool. Yeah.
I just like, it's like, skateboarding's in right now. Gleam in the Cube is just like a tearing up the movie charts.
But I remember when that album came out and it was fucking enormous. Like every like song after song after song.
New Sensation, Need You Tonight, Wildlife, which I don't Never Tear Us Apart.
Never Tear Us
Apart.
One of the first bands I think with
Calling
a
Nations.
Video game.
What? They
there
had
was
a video game?
Game on Sega CD, I wanna say.
What?
Yeah. If someone can research that. I remember like they had some kind of video game situation going on.
Michael Hutchins has kind of a Jim Morrison vibe.
A little bit right there, yeah, that was.
Except a little more coiffed because it was the 80s, you know?
I remember he had that vibe on that album cover, and then I remember watching the Video Music Awards that year, which is something I did back then.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like glam nerded out. His hair was cut really short, and he had these big, thick glasses on. And I thought that was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
And it says, make my video for the Sega CD.
Oh, that's right.
Was Sega CD before Sega Genesis?
It was after. See, it was Sega Master System, Sega Genesis, and then there became all these attachments like Sega CD, Sega 32X.
Okay.
Sega CD was just the worst thing.
Editing music video for NXS using random shots.
Oh, okay. So that was, okay. Like
early crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
Did it was crisscross, just the timestamp.
Wow. Oh. So, the last time I played Sega Genesis was when Sonic the Hedgehog was a thing.
Yes.
But is there still a Sega, like, system that people can buy?
It's just a software company now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't make the Sega Genesis was huge, and then after that it just...
The Saturn tanked, and then the Dreamcast was really great, but it didn't sell.
Oh.
Because it came out sort of between generations, and it bankrupted the company.
Was that the one that was like a hologram?
It had a little screen on the control.
Do you not play like in the tour bus? Do you not have like an Xbox or anything?
And
you...
I don't. I mean, there's usually in the tour bus there's like a video game console of some sort. Let me think of the last time I played a video game was probably there's a place called the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee.
Oh yeah, I've performed there.
Yeah, it's lovely, and they have like an old school Nintendo. So I played Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
That's what I played that thing.
Yeah, which is such a great game. Except, didn't they have to like...
It became Punch-Out with Mr. Dream, where they replaced Mike Tyson after he tried to kill people.
I thought it was the rape allegation.
Yes, it was.
Could have been that.
Yeah.
It could have been that, too. Okay. That could have been the other thing, too. Yeah, that Pabst Theater is really nice.
It's really nice. And there's really good coffee there. Like, they have a barista who comes in, and the catering's amazing.
Oh, nice. Shit.
Yeah.
It's a good town. Milwaukee's a good town.
It is a good town.
Are you playing in LA anytime soon?
Yeah.
What? When?
I'll
look it up on the internet.
In March, I think, at the Wiltern.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a good venue to see you in. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Can we come to that?
Of course.
Okay,
yeah,
good, thank
come.
You.
Yeah, just
That'll
buy a ticket. It's easy.
I would love to.
Anyone can get it.
Yes, I will get. Yes, that's fine. That's what I meant. I mean, there's still tickets available.
He's really hurting for cash right now. If you get him on the guest list, he'll bring in an amp. Anything. Anything you can. Really,
I promise I will not plug in your pedal to a different outlet than the amp, so that you don't shock your face.
Thank you.
That'd be really shitty.
Thank you.
Shock your face, and then one of these days I will send you. My best friend and I made a. We did a bluegrass cover of like 18 Radiohead songs.
Whoa.
So it's like 18 radio. It's just, we made this thing called Rodeohead, and it was like it's 18 Radiohead songs in 4 minutes, but bluegrass style. It's ridiculous.
Wait, 18 Radiohead songs.
It's like 18
in
radio,
4 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a medley. So we jump around and then like take the bass line from one song and put it like underneath the melody of another song.
So you're a super music nerd.
Well, these guys are way bigger music nerds. I like some things about music, but these guys would talk me under the table.
He's got me.
He's got you?
Yeah, yeah. Ewan knows way more about that.
I wasted most of my life. You're great live, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's just stuff, you know, like just how some guys' sports scores stick in their head for some reason, you know,
it's
yeah. records.
No,
yeah, yeah,
it is,
exactly.
Yeah, I know
like
what you
pop-punk records. For me, it's like pop-punk records from the 90s. Like, I can tell you when they all came out, but I don't know why. I don't really listen to them anymore, but it's still there. Still
yeah.
there.
Do you still find that you're able to enjoy music on a level of not, like not being a songwriter where you can just appreciate it?
Oh,
or do
God,
you still
yeah.
like, oh, okay, good. So you don't listen to stuff and go, oh, they should have done this, or I see what
no,
they did.
No, I don't do that. I don't do that. I mean, if something's like, you know, sometimes I can marvel at like, how kind of shitty something is. Like, wow, this is like
what?
Amazing.
Like
event.
What? What would you use as an example?
No, I wouldn't say.
Put her on this. But I'm sure she means most of the things that are in the top 10 on iTunes right now.
Sure, sure.
But no, I mean, I never had that period of being like, oh, well, I don't know, they didn't use a dominant 7 there, so I feel... that's a real missed opportunity. Like, I don't have that. I don't care. I like it. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm psyched about music, you know? But it's interesting to, like, have some, you know, I'm 31 now, so...
Me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's plan our funerals.
Yeah, yeah. Feels like it.
I'm close to that.
Yeah. Here's how I know it's starting to become a real adult. I went to Urban Outfitters, and I couldn't find anything to buy.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. First time, it was real sad.
That's your benchmark?
Yeah, sure. It was just kind of a jokey thing to say, I thought, and got a couple laughs, and yeah, it wasn't my mission statement for the year.
Urban Outfitters has really discovered this, like, they've gone all internet-y, so, like the last time I was in one a couple, like, a month ago, and it was just all fucking memes on shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like, here's the Grumpy Cat section, and here's yeah. the, you know, the Heisenberg face section, and yeah. here's the...
Very 90s now, too. Like,
that's,
that's
the thing, is you see...
Oh, yeah, the girls are wearing, like, the boots with the dresses, and...
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Jeanne Garofalo style coming back?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, just watch the movie Singles, and they're all dressing like that.
Totally.
Yeah.
A Reality Bites.
Yeah, Reality Bites. Yeah.
Singles totally holds up, by the way.
Yeah. Touch Me, I'm Dick.
I actually went to the place in Seattle where they filmed Singles.
Oh, really?
I drove by the apartment, yeah.
That's awesome.
I tried to find the apartment. Yeah. I remember being so excited when I was in Seattle for the first time, and like I saw Aloha Street, and I was like, that's where the party was that Jeremy Piven was inviting him to. Before you go down on Aloha Street.
Yeah.
What's so funny about space? Someday that guy's going to grow a bunch more hair and be really handsome. No. I swear. Yeah. I'm from the future.
Yeah. Also, has anyone, since like mashups have become such a thing, has anyone gone back and done that?
No.
Done the Public Enemy Elvis Costello mashup?
No.
They should.
Oh.
Using samples from Jeremy Piven in the old movie.
That's a good idea.
Do it. Internet.
Do you, have you thought about doing like mashup-y type of stuff, or do you? I mean, there's a really what's interesting to me about your music is that it feels like you're putting two things together that work really well together. Like, especially what I thought was originally called digital wetness.
Oh my God, that's what I was gonna call the tour.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's called Digital Witness, but I was like, okay, what should I name the upcoming tour? And I was like, the Digital Wetness Tour. And I got shot down at my people who sometimes have better
judgment.
When
I first saw the song Digital Witness, my brain read it as Digital Wetness.
That is fucking awesome.
And I was like, I didn't hear the song. I don't know what this song's about, but that's fucking amazing.
Soul.
It's the guy from earlier in the podcast. Mwah.
Mom, I need a new keyboard again.
Honey, stop ruining them. Yeah, I thought it was Digital Wetness.
Whoa.
But it's you have this really, really pretty voice where you stick the landing on the notes, but then there's also this other kind of like... just your music. I don't know. It's like I could totally picture you with just like a guitar and just doing singing. But I don't know. Where does the inspiration to kind of mash all of your stuff together?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was kind of like a process of realizing that, you know, okay, so your voice is based on your build and your musculature and all the shit and the shape of your cranium, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like people are get born with certain instruments and they can train them and they can, you know, make them sing better in pitch or whatever, but the sound of your voice is the sound of your voice. So I but I like, you know, aggressive music and stuff with a harder edge sometimes, and so it was kind of like this grand trial and error experiment, like how to like combine those two things that are there, where there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance, because I have like, I'm a girl and I have a girl voice, I have a white girl voice, you know, and but the music kind of like tells a different story, mm-hmm. you know, and I can be very lacerating with the guitar and kind of use that as the violence. So it's just kind of like, okay, let's see if these two things kind of can coexist in a way that's convincing.
And do you feel like you're kind of getting to the heart of that with each album? Is that what you're exploring? Are you exploring like emotional things? Or are you exploring like music things? Like where does your head go first?
Oh, my head goes everywhere. I mean, I think as a songwriter, you know, I'm that kind of idea of like unique universality, like, okay, this one little detail tells so much about, that kind of human interaction or that kind of emotional state. So I try to write. This is so boring.
It's not boring. This is the stuff I like
to
hear
so
about.
Boring. I try to write like from a, you know, write the little tiny details and the shit that you, the terrible thoughts you think that you probably wouldn't say or that you feel ashamed to admit, or even like trying to elevate the mundane a little bit or shine a light on it. Storytelling, even if it's a little bit opaque or whatever, just enough information where people can superimpose themselves into it. And then musically, I don't know. I just like chase after stuff that I hear in my head and hope to get it on paper, on tape or Pro Tools, as it were.
On wax.
Yeah. I tried to do my second record on tape, which is a lot, you know.
It's big right now.
Yeah, but you know, the thing with tape is like, I move things around and I'm like, oh no, I should double that chorus and I should this and that and whatever. And I'm kind of a tinkerer in that way. And like with tape, it was such a shit show. It was like, I want to add an extra 4 beats to the chorus. Okay, I'm going to take lunch. And when I come back, the dude might have like spliced it together. Yeah. And it's like, oh.
I want to add 4 beats here. No.
No, yeah, exactly.
No, you already did it.
It got to that point where I was like, okay, I'm making non-musical decisions because I don't want to stop working and like take an hour for
there's something interesting about that, though, the idea of how immediate and how like, you know, there will be fuck ups that you can't control.
Yeah.
And in a Pro Tools world where it's like you can easily go, that's a bit off. I'm going to redo that. And I'm just going to punch it in. And the idea that you're like, there's these little fuck ups and these little kind of honest things that happened while it was happening that kind of add to that kind of stuff.
That's totally real.
Yeah. Not only that, but also, you know, if you have no barriers, sometimes that can actually be limiting because you don't have anything to sort of
guide you
to weave around.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, I even find, even like in television or whatever, when you'll get notes on something, it's kind of good sometimes because it forces you to get more creative, is that if you could just do anything.
Yeah.
Like, limitations are actually where you're forced to dig down and be more creative, other than like, I could do whatever I want.
Yeah.
What do I want?
Exactly.
I don't know.
It's funny. I was talking to my friend's band once, and I, like, they put out a 7-inch, and I was talking to the drummer. I was like, oh, there's a spot in the drum part, like, where you stop, like, and then, like, you come in the weirdest spot, but it's so rad. Like, what? How'd you think of that? Because it was so weird to me, but it sounded so rad. He's like, oh, it was like we were running down the wire. We had to have the drums tracked. That was the last opportunity to do that song. Everything else was good, except I dropped my stick and stopped playing, got another stick, and then just came in. And then, like, I was like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm doing it now when we play it live.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's just this like accident that happened that ended up making it such an interesting, you know, drum part.
And that kind of serendipity is great, and that works for, but I'm not a band, you know, so I wasn't even like, it was like not four people just playing their feelings in a room. It was like, oh man, that. So it didn't work out on tape for me, but
yeah.
But it totally is a vibey thing, a vibey choice for others.
So when you're on things or when they introduce you, are you introduced as Annie or as Saint Vincent?
Oh God, you know what? I don't even know because it's. I sometimes just for brevity's sake, like, oh hi, this is Saint Vincent. But you know that always feels a little. That's obviously a little silly. So. Whatevs. Nobody calls me St. Vincent in my daily life. My mom calls me Annie. You know what I mean?
Then Annie ye shall be. Well, this was, I guess we're at about, oh yeah, we're at a little over an hour. This was the podcast.
We did it.
We did
sure
it.
We sure did.
We won the race.
We did. Did we get hired by you?
You're all hired.
Oh. Hey! I don't want to work with Kyle.
Oh.
You're right.
We'd like to hand in our resignations.
We just hired you.
I really hope to see you. I really hope to see you more and do some, like, pop around some more comedy stuff, too.
Yeah,
and I really
like
hope
to.
That you end up on Louis' show at some point.
Oh, come now.
He's doing it on the vision board.
He's doing it now. He's doing it now.
Oh, man.
You're popping on the At Midnight show. I think Nico's on one of the shows tonight.
Nico Case?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, cool. Wait.
Yeah, that's great.
Is she going to be here?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I like that lady.
She's hilarious.
She's a good lady.
She's
I like her.
I can't remember if she's on the...
real good.
I can't remember she's on the...
Beautiful voice.
Yeah. I'm sure she's on the first show or the second show. If she's on the first show, then you'll see her. But
that's great.
She's pretty...
I like that. The show can have just people who are funny.
Well, I had to sell them on it.
I'm sure.
Because they were like...
Musicians.
Why would we have... And I go, no, you got to hear her. She's really fucking funny.
Yeah.
And the show doesn't have to just be comedians. Like, there are funny people who are not comedians.
Yeah, definitely.
And so she's kind of a fun experiment of, like...
She's going to be great. She's going to knock it out of the park.
I think she's going to knock it out of the park, too. And thank you for doing the show, and thank you for doing the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. And I like this podcast, and I like the show.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
No bullcrap. I am a huge fan of your work. And
thank you.
So it was... I was very excited when I heard that you were going to come on the podcast and come on the show, too. And especially, like, when I first heard that you had done stuff with Aukerman, I'm like, oh, well, if she knows Aukerman, she obviously is in this comedy world in a weird sort of way.
Oh, yeah. I'm tight with the Portlandia crew.
Nice.
Got it. I'm in.
Lua. Annie. Enjoy Breed, everyone.
Spinoff.
What, Annie? Yeah. We got to shoot the opening with her coming out of the comedy cellar.
Yeah.
Singing, that's a music video. You could just do Louis' opening as a music video. It would fucking destroy.
Man.
People would love it.
You think he'll have the same title, like title credits? You know, because he gets really esoteric with his format. Like, you think he'll have the same title?
I'm
surprised he hasn't changed it already.
Man.
I'm not surprised, actually, because it's become so iconic with the show, which I guess is when he might shake it up. But I think, since we're deep diving, I think that's an opportunity to kind of do like a Simpsons Easter egg thing where...
It's always something...
There's always something weird in the background or different, or like there's a different different famous person eating pizza in the pizza shop or whatever.
Yeah, or you could do it like The Wire and have, you know, a different artist, for example, sing the theme song.
Every time. Oh, they did that for Weeds too.
Yeah. Oh, they did. Yeah.
Or Man did one
I
of
think
them.
Tim DeLauder, your bro, your best...
We're tight.
Your
bros.
Best bro.
We are best friends, yeah.
I think he wrote the theme song to that. Why do I think that? No. He did it for United States of Terra.
Oh, he did the for United States of Terra? Yeah.
No. Nurse Betty.
Nurse Jackie.
Something like that.
Nurse Betty was Renee Zellweger.
Good movie. Underrated movie.
Was that a good movie?
Yeah. It's real dark.
You know what's a great movie?
What?
To Die For.
Oh, that is a great movie.
I haven't seen that in so long.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, she's great in
that. Yeah, that's a great movie.
She really is fantastic in that movie. Yeah. And also, just such a... I feel like that movie might have been a... I mean, it was a big movie at the time, but I feel like it was also a little bit ahead of its time just in terms of, like, fame obsession.
I think so, too.
That it so applies to, like, now, with the exception being, like, that was a pre-YouTube world.
Yeah.
So now I think it's even more applicable. But now as we say this out loud, some fucking studio person is going to be like, oh yeah, we should reboot that. Don't reboot it.
Don't do that.
It was
unless
good.
Unless you're Todd Haynes and you're like, I need to do it again. Nobody else should touch that
please
movie.
Please don't do it again. Good to see you, Annie.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was really fun. I'm enjoying my time in Los Angeles.
Oh, good.
It's a nice time to be here.
Oh my God. It's a
weather's
shit show
not oppressive.
Oh,
you know?
It's lovely.
Yeah.
People are happy here. It's weird.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
My favorite city.
Ooh, all right, the end.
bike.
I know they're new. I'm so sorry, Katie.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.